Good day, everyone. Blake Crash Criddle here, and welcome to The Medley. And today, well, what can I say? It's the moment of truth, because we're going to be speaking with Sensei Ron Thomas, better known as Bobby from Cobra Kai and The Karate Kid. He's an actor, author, and motivational speaker that has spent years inspiring people to unlock their potential. You'll get to hear some behind-the-scenes stories from the set of The Karate Kid, and you'll also get to hear the story about how he was inspired to become a motivational speaker. What was your life like before you were in the iconic 80s film, The Karate Kid?
Well, I was in Hollywood doing what actors do. You know, I was going on auditions. I was training with acting coaches and pursuing my craft. I was working up at Universal Studios in the Conan the Barbarian show. I had a pretty good gig as an actor because I could come and go and do films and do TV and didn't have to wait tables.
Was there anyone that inspired you to pursue an acting career?
No, I got involved with a theater group in my hometown at the age of 11 or 12 and started doing plays and musicals and musical theater. And the person who produced all of those shows and directed them. And he took a group of us from Reno down to Los Angeles, got us an agent. And, the rest is history. We would travel from Reno to Hollywood for auditions, and then we'd go back home. And then, you know, when it came time, I decided to move and make my home permanently in LA.
So how did you land the role of Bobby, the Cobra Kai member from Karate Kid?
Well, I mean, the same way, you know, just the normal audition process of going on your first reading, which I did. I went on my first reading and read for Caro Jones, our casting director, and she liked me enough to give me a callback and then sent me, I think my third callback was actually over at the studios and with John Avildsen and a whole group of potential actors for the film, names that you would know back then, some that you didn't see, different people coming in and out of the casting office. We were on a soundstage and John Avildsen was recording all the auditions. So that's kind of the normal process. You go on your first audition. If they like you, you get a callback. If they like you, they send you to producers and directors. You get a third callback, sometimes a fourth callback. But eventually, I landed the role.
Well, I have to tell you that The Karate Kid is one of my favorite 80s movies growing up. I've always been fascinated with the 1980s in terms of pop culture and music. And The Karate Kid was released the same year that my mom and dad were married. So that's another thing that's special about it.
Right.
And I read Ralph Macchio's book, and he said that the beach scene, I think, was one of the first scenes that was ever filmed with you and Johnny and the rest of the Cobra Kai gang. And that was filmed, I think, on Halloween in 1983.
That's the first day that cameras started to roll.
Is that right? Yeah. And there's a bit of a foreshadowing there, because on Halloween, you and, well, actually, I don't think you were really involved with beating up Daniel LaRusso, but that happened in the movie on Halloween.
No, but I was there. You know, I was at the beach. He was a fighter. He's a martial artist, but he had a moral compass. He had ethics and values. He knew when the line was being crossed. I often refer to him as the good bad guy.
It just occurred to me before we started recording, I watched the scene where you tripped Daniel when you were playing soccer with him. And then you said, did you have a nice trip? And then he retaliated by punching you in the face. You remember that scene?
I remember it well, because he actually really did hit me.
Ouch.
By accident, but his fist, you know, is supposed to go past the side of my face, so the camera picks it up and looks like a hit. But he clipped me in the mouth with his forearm.
But didn't Ralph Macchio actually get hit at one point with a back kick or something by Johnny when you were filming the Halloween fight scene?
Yeah, he got hurt too. He got kicked during the fence fight when we were all in the Halloween costumes. I've been involved doing stunt fighting in other shows like Conan the Barbarian, for example. Injuries are common. Let's just say that.
Did you take any karate lessons before you started filming The Karate Kid? Because I believe Ralph Macchio and Pat Morita did.
Well, I was already a black belt. So that's the big secret behind me and Bobby and Mike and, well, me, you know, Ron Thomas. Because I had, when I moved from Reno, Nevada to Los Angeles, I was already a second degree black belt in Japanese jiu-jitsu. The story when I went to read for this film is that they were looking for actors. My agent said, they're looking for actors. Don't talk about your martial arts. Don't bring it up unless they ask you. And because you're going to be reading for John Avildsen, they're going to hire a karate trainer anyway. So I didn't say anything. You know, I got the role without having to use my martial arts as a, you know, part of it. And then later on is when Pat Johnson recognized that I actually had some training. So, yeah, I had several years of training before I moved to L.A.
Well, you certainly have me beat. I only have a yellow belt in karate because I took karate when I was a kid. And it was around that time that my dad introduced me to The Karate Kid.
Okay.
Yeah. And when we watched that scene together where you and Daniel were fighting on the soccer field, he told me rather firmly that he didn't want to see that kind of behavior from me on the field or anywhere.
Yeah. Well, my sensei, my own sensei up in Reno, you know, it's a tradition in the martial arts of judo and jiu-jitsu. Judo came from jiu-jitsu. That if you hurt somebody without just cause, if you can't defend it, if you were not defending yourself, but you just go out there and use your martial arts and you hurt somebody, that your sensei is going to do the same thing you to you that you did to that person. So it's, you know, that's not why you train in the martial arts. You definitely don't train in the martial arts to go around beating people up. That's not the purpose.
No, you train so that you don't have to fight.
Well, yeah. I mean, the biggest fight you'll ever have is with yourself in life anyway. So it's an inner battle, which is why I wrote my book and I'm into personal development, you know.
Yeah, we had a sensei that you could say that his teaching style was a combination of both Cobra Kai style and Miyagi-Do style karate. You know, there was some meditation involved, but there was also a lot of discipline. Like if you screwed up, you know, he would make you do 50 push-ups.
Sure.
But yeah, let's talk about your book. For people that aren't familiar with it, what's the book about and what's it called?
Well, it's about life mastery. It's about mastery in general, self-mastery, life mastery. And it's called The Hidden Life Lessons of Mr. Miyagi. And that subtitle is An Unbeatable Guide to Happiness, Success, and Mastery Beyond the Dojo. So the book is just about all of those things. It's really, the subtitle wraps it up. It's an ultimate guide to happiness, success, and mastery beyond the dojos, because we could all use that, right? So you know, I used the title. I wanted to use my brand. I am a true life sensei. I have been involved in martial arts, as I just said, prior to The Karate Kid, and athletics in general before that. So I already knew about the power of the mindset, how important it is in success and athletic success or just success in life. I'm a motivational speaker. I talk about these things on stage. The esoteric principles of the martial arts. So I wanted to tie in a well-known brand that fans might enjoy, you know, Mr. Miyagi, The Karate Kid stuff. But I wanted to dive deeper. So if you look at the lessons, here's the thing. I've been told through the years that The Karate Kid has changed people, changed lives, right? Like The Karate Kid, watching That Karate Kid changed my life. Really? A movie changed your life? And they're like, yeah, man, it got me started in the martial arts. And, you know, and I learned a lot. And, so the martial arts is what really changed your life. Yeah, probably. I guess so. You know, so I wanted to take the esoteric principles and the things taught in the martial arts and bring it to a broader audience of people who may not ever step foot inside a dojo, but they enjoy The Karate Kid. Everybody loves Mr. Miyagi. Nobody can deny that he was a life master as well as a karate master. And I wanted to dive deeper into those lessons, whether the lesson was about respect or balance or not everything is as it seems, Daniel-san. You know, these types of lessons are all in the book, but I dive deeper into them to uncover what's hidden. What's the hidden meaning in these lessons? What's there that we can all use that we didn't see on screen? We didn't talk about it on screen, but what's there that we can all use in our personal lives and our professional lives to just be better and be more masterful? And that's what the book is about.
And I noticed that you have a few ebooks as well. I looked on your website. One of them is called Positive Thinking is for Sissies, and the other is The Best You Can Sucks. What kind of lessons can people expect in those two books?
Right. Well, Positive Thinking is for Sissies was not, it's not originally, in fact, I have the hard copy behind me here on my desk. It wasn't originally an ebook. It's just that my publisher went out of business during COVID. So that book, my intentions are to find another publisher and go ahead and have a second edition released. Might even do some updates on the book. But that's mastering, the Positive Thinking is for Sissies is about, again, kind of like about mastery, but mastering your emotions. Because I've got it that our emotions can master us. Our mind can master us if we're not careful. So, and even if we are careful. So Positive Thinking is for Sissies. It takes on primary emotions that we all have: anger, anxiety, sadness, guilt, you know, these things that we all deal with as human beings. Because those are inner opponents. They're inner adversaries that can beat us up if we let them. So I think that human beings are very good at beating themselves up. You know, and then The Best You Can Sucks has to do it. That is an ebook. I wrote it as an ebook. And it just has to do with the best you can is an excuse, right? It's like, but I did the best I can. I did the best I could. I doubted I could actually make it happen, but I did the best I could. So you defeated yourself from the very beginning. See, the best you can is a bar that you set for yourself based on what? It's not based on your potential, because your potential is always going to be greater than the best you can. It's because most people don't even know how to tap into what's really within them, their true potential. And if they did, there'd be a lot more happy and successful and masterful people in the world. So, that kind of sums it up. It's all personal development stuff. I'm very into mindset, personal development, personal growth, because if we're not better today than we were yesterday, and if we're not intending to be better tomorrow than we are today, what are we doing? Why are we here? What are we up to on this planet? That's kind of my world.
I noticed on your website, too, that you offer some online courses. So I would assume that those online courses also have the same teachings that one might expect to find in one of your books.
Yep. Well, they will. So you just nailed my to-do list. I've got a bunch of recording to do and new online courses to put up for people, because I can't coach everybody. You know, I do a lot of private coaching or group coaching, seminars, etc., but I can't coach the world. So my intention is to put up some of the best stuff in the form of courses that people can purchase and go through the information and the content and the exercises and the homework, etc., like boot camps, so to speak, online, and to help people out, you know, if they want it. So yeah, definitely. That's definitely on my to-do list to get that stuff recorded.
Now, Cobra Kai recently ended its run, but it's safe to say that it was a huge hit. And you appeared in the series as Bobby, and he is now a minister. And in many cases, a motivational speaker, just like you are now, only he's a religious motivational speaker. How did it feel to play Bobby again and to get together with your old friends from The Karate Kid?
Yeah, well, my old friends were always my friends. We've been friends this whole time. You know, we've traveled together. We've been to each other's weddings and funerals, and not each other's funerals, but we've been to, you know, family members' funerals. We've been through life together. We've taken the journey together. So it wasn't, you know, unusual or anything weird to be back on the set with my friends, except that we were back on the set recreating these characters all these years later in front of the camera doing what we love to do. And so that part of it felt awesome. To play Bobby as a pastor is, I think, a brilliant move by the writers and the creators, because they just evolved the character from his youth to getting on this path of, I don't know, maybe he was trying to make amends for his own mistakes in life and when he was younger, and then evolving even past that to help guide others, because that's always who Bobby was. You know, he was always trying to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. I don't know about the religious tones to it. I think that, you know, Bobby still, he's willing to go get in a bar fight and have a beer and get in a bar fight with his friends. You know, he's still willing to sweep his friend in church. And so, you know, I've actually taken a little bit of heat from some fans who are what I would consider overly religious. I'm not religious at all in my personal life. I'm spiritual though. I'm very spiritual. But I think religion has a lot of issues, you know, and I don't think that you don't have to look far for the evidence of that. So I think that Bobby's still, as far as I'm concerned, as far as I go, pretty aligned with me. You know, Bobby and I have always had a similar sort of track, I think, in life that we walk, path that we walk.
What was your absolute favorite scene to film in Cobra Kai or Karate Kid?
Well, I think in Cobra Kai, there's a couple of them, right? I mean, I think that it really was cool that Bobby got to marry his old friend Johnny. I think that was just sweet and brought humanity back to the show. And it was just a great episode directed by William Zabka, who's a great director. So that scene was fun. Obviously, the church stuff was fun. I think the season 3, episode 3, where I sweep Johnny in church, that was a lot of fun. That was just, and it was a magical time. It was just me and Billy, you know, me and William. We go way back. It was surreal in a lot of different ways, but it was a great day on set to just be he and I in the church alone doing our stuff. There was a lot more dialogue that we had together after I sweep him, when he's eating the coffee cake and he doesn't know how they get the coffee in the cake. But there was a lot more dialogue in that scene, and a lot of it got cut. I would say big chunk of dialogue got cut, but spending the day doing that dialogue. And here's the thing about that day too. It's, was also the day that Rob Garrison was very close to the end. He was going into hospice. And we knew it. So on one hand, Billy and I are having this great day filming together and hanging out together and doing the stuff in church and fun stuff and you know, sweeping the leg and coming in drunk and all that was a lot of fun. On the other hand, we both knew what was happening with Rob Garrison. And so it was bittersweet.
Yeah. Rob Garrison, for those of you that don't know, played Tommy, one of the other Cobra Kai gang members.
Right. Yep. And he was toward the end of his life. Those were his final days. In fact, he had passed away on my flight home from Atlanta to down to Southern California. He had passed away and my phone was off, and I kind of knew it was coming. And Billy knew it was coming and had texted me, keep your phone on, but I couldn't connect to Wi-Fi on the plane for some reason. And so I got off the plane, turned my phone on. My phone was blowing up with all kinds of messages because the news had been released.
Well, my condolences for your loss.
Yeah, thank you.
When in your career did you decide to focus more on being a motivational speaker as opposed over being an actor?
I don't know if I've focused on it more. I enjoy both. I think, motivational speaking is still on the stage. It's right. That's where I started. I started on the stage. And so motivational speaking is just taking, it kind of is a performance in a way. But it's taking, like I said, the lessons of that I've learned along the way as an athlete or a martial artist or getting certified in neurolinguistic programming and hypnosis and learning about the subconscious mind and just human behavior, human potential, that whole thing, and getting on the stage and talking about that. I think that I enjoy both, you know. I enjoy being on the stage. I enjoy being in front of a camera. So I can't pick one over the other because both of them I enjoy. I think that Hollywood became, it's always been a tough town. You know, it's very hard. It's really hard to get traction. It's really hard to have a career in Hollywood that's lasting. You know, you got to pay the bills. I think I have more control over the motivational speaking than I do over some casting director or studio, some decision about who's going to get the part. You know, is it going to be me or is it going to be someone's nephew? You know, so I there's a little bit more control over the world of personal development for me than over what Hollywood does and doesn't do.
Do you have any pointers for people that might be interested in becoming a motivational speaker? Because being a person with autism, I've flirted with the idea of being a motivational speaker on the side to tell my story.
Well, that's it. That's the pointer. Tell your story. You know, how did that's really a big key in motivational speaking is having a story or more than one story that you can tell from the stage because the audience is going to relate to that. What I love about episode 12 in Cobra Kai is it brings humanity back to the show that had all this craziness going on and all these storylines and characters. Episode 12 is people cry watching that baby be born and watching Bobby marry Johnny and talk his friend into getting married and taking the leap and not to sleep on his own happiness. From the stage as a motivational speaker, people relate to what they can relate to. They relate to humanity and human stories and authenticity and transparency. And so your story is going to help someone else, guaranteed. And that's the biggest pointer I can give you. Find a niche. If it's autism, find a niche because somebody in that audience is autistic or has a child that is or knows someone. So everybody can relate.
This last question that I have is a fun question. You know, this is something that has divided Karate Kid fans, I think, since day one. Who do you think was the real bully in The Karate Kid, Johnny or Daniel?
Kreese. Kreese was the real bully. I love the fandom. I love how fans take it to the next level and start all the what ifs conversations out there and what about this? And people see Daniel as the bully. But let's just bring it back to our brilliant writer, Robert Mark Kamen, who wrote a screenplay, who had a villain and a hero, you know, a couple of villains and a couple of heroes, and just a great formula script that Robert Mark Kamen wrote with every intention of Kreese. It was a dojo of bullying, right? It was a bully dojo. So Kreese was the leader, but Johnny was the bully, you know, in the original script. And I can see how the fandom out there might want to twist that and make Daniel's son or Ralph the bully. But in my view, I just stick to the original intention of the screenplay, which was that we were the bullies, you know. Cobra Kai was Cobra Kai was the bullies. Johnny was the leader of the pack, so to speak. And Kreese was the leader above that, the one who fostered all the, brought the inner bully out of his students. And some of us took it out into the real world. And unfortunately, so the thing about it is bullying is a hot topic in real life, right? It's one of many issues of the human experience that can, should, and has to be addressed. It really needs to be addressed and, you know, put a lid on it. I have an 11-year-old daughter, so I don't ever want to see her bullied. Bullies are weak. We have them in political office. They're weak. And you get them in a room alone and their weakness shines. The only reason a bully gets away with anything is because they have people around them. It's a gang, really, like the Cobra Kai, you know, so.
Ron, it was awesome to have you on the Medley this week. Again, thank you so very much for joining us.
No, thank you, Blake. It's a pleasure to be here.
And that was motivational speaker, actor, and author Sensei Ron Thomas. To find out more about him, visit his website, senseironthomas.com. Until next time, here at the Medley, we're all kinds of different.